Well, just a word of explanation about what we're going to do this morning. The reason we had that reading from Mark chapter 9 is because we've been looking together through Mark's gospel. Whenever I've been preaching, we've been looking at that. Tom's been looking at other things, and I've been looking at Mark's gospel, been going through it. And that's where we've got to today. So it hasn't been picked specifically. It's just that the point where we've got to. As a Bible-believing church, what we try and do each week is open up God's word so that God himself can speak to us and change our lives. And so I'm going to try and do that now. I've spent some hours in preparation, and I'm going to try and explain this to you and see if it helps you. Now, I'm aware that some of you may have never been here before, may have never been to a church before, and you may find it quite challenging, but we'll see how it goes. To be challenged is a good thing, because if God is speaking to us through his Bible and God is challenging us, then that is actually a good thing for us. I'm going to have to apologise to you guys down here, because I struggle to look over to my right when I'm up on the stage, and it's going to be even harder, so I'm sorry, you've seen my back down there. I'm sorry about that. So, 68% of people have already started their Christmas shopping. Did you know that? 68% of people, according to GMTV on Wednesday morning, that is. One of these things where you phone in. See, Jacob and Amelia, I've got two children, they were born on the same day, 3 years apart, October the 23rd. We were buying Jacob's birthday present this year, and the shop that we went to on October the 20th was playing Christmas music. And it was horrible. They thought, you haven't got their birthday out of the way yet. But it's on the way. It's coming, isn't it? And we can't escape it. We can't avoid it no matter what we do. And what do? Do we embrace it? Do we grab it? Well, I don't know about you, but I quite like Christmas movies. My favourite is Muppet's Christmas Carol. It's probably because I'm a bit of a Muppet, I don't know. But have you seen Miracle on 34th Street? Have you seen that film? It's an old one, isn't it? It was remade a few years ago. You know, and you know the whole thing that Santa Claus is put on trial. You know, does Father Christmas exist? And have you noticed through the film, at the beginning, you know, of the trial, people think it's just ridiculous, it's a bit stupid, obviously this is a fictional figure, blah, 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 blah. But as the trial starts to build and the momentum starts to come, people start to say, well, I believe, and they get these badges, don't they, I believe, and they get these big banners that say, I believe, and all this sort of thing's going on. And even towards the end of the film, the two people that have, the baddies, if you like, who have got him arrested in the first place, sort of open their jackets to each other, and they've got one of these badges on saying, I believe. You know, and you're like, yes, it's great. Because it doesn't really matter, does it? Whether we believe in Father Christmas or not doesn't make any difference whatsoever to our lives. It's a nice thing, isn't it? It's nice to think that this guy in this red suit is flying around the world at a million miles an hour giving us things. Fantastic. And we can leave it at that. And so we can watch that film and we can feel good about ourselves. But when Jesus came to earth, he also came that people would believe in him. And that's a whole different ballgame. Because that belief in Jesus impacts our lives and changes us in a real way. And we've seen that today, haven't we? Three people have been able to share how that has been the case for them. And this passage shows us two things. It shows us the power of God. And that is a big thing. The power of God. And it shows us that God expects us to believe in him. Or probably more closely, Jesus expects us to believe in him. It shows us the power of God, but it shows us that Jesus is actually expecting us to believe in him. Now, I've given us three headings, and we've hopefully got a PowerPoint thing going on over in that corner, that will help us try and get through this passage. That looks so much better than what it was on my computer last night. That's brilliant. The first one, I think, that comes out of this passage is our helplessness. That's the first thing that I'd like to look at. Our helplessness. And the first thing that we look at is this boy who is brought to Jesus. Did you see that in the story? Or he's not called a boy, he's called the father's son. That's how he's introduced to us. And we see, don't we, that he's in real trouble. I mean, desperation. Really, really bad situation. And he's caused an upset with some of Jesus' disciples and the teachers of the law. These people are arguing over this boy. And just to fill in the background, it tells us that Jesus came back to the disciples with three of his other disciples, because they've just been up on a mountain. We find that at the beginning of chapter 9. That's what I preached on last time. It's called the Transfiguration. Jesus was transformed before them. And who he really is started to shine through. And they could see it. And then that finishes, and they come back down the mountain, and they walk into this argument. These two sides are arguing. Let me read to you verses 17 to 18. I don't know if that will come up on the screen or not. I'll put some of the text up there to help us. Yeah, there it is. Look. It says, a man in the crowd answered, because Jesus has asked him a question. A man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. So this man brings his son to Jesus, and we see this son is completely helpless. Completely. What a description of what is wrong. I mean, that's quite graphic, isn't it? Of what is wrong with him. This boy clearly needs help. So what? So what? You know, if you're anything like me, that's probably what you're thinking right now. You're just thinking, well, so what? You know, when you have the Bible read and we think about Jesus, is this what comes into your mind? You've seen some pictures on the videos or on the telly, maybe something like Jesus of Nazareth or something around the time, like Gladiator, and you know how the people dressed, and you know, you've got this picture and Jesus is walking down the mountain, you know, full with beard and flowing robe, and here he comes, you know, sort of superhero-like countenance about him, and he comes into the situation, and this guy's in trouble, and he saves him. And it, you know, it's great, isn't it? And it gets put alongside Superman or Spider-Man or Batman or something like that, Father Christmas, whatever it is. And we think, one of two things. It belongs to a different time, to a different age, and it is just irrelevant today. Is that what you're thinking? That this story that we've had read is just something that happened a long time ago with no relevance for us today. That's the first thing. The second thing is what I've already said. It belongs to the realm of fiction. It wants to be alongside Father Christmas or whatever. Because I think that that's what happens with most of us. If we're not Christians, if we don't know Jesus personally, when we read a story like that, we can put it in a box somewhere and we can leave it there. But when we do that, if that's what you're doing with this passage, you are missing out on what this passage is about, on what this gospel is about. In fact, on what this whole book is about. We're missing out on the fact that all of this is about Jesus and our need of him. Now, this boy obviously needed help. He was in a desperate situation. His father doesn't know what to do with him, so he takes him to this person that he's heard of, to Jesus. He needs help. It's maybe not that obvious for us. We maybe think we don't need help. We don't realize. We think that we're all right and we don't need Jesus. Jesus didn't come because we were basically all right and we just needed to be shown a thing or two. He didn't come just to sort of point us in the right direction. Say, well, you know, you're doing okay. You just need to change your compass bearing a little bit and start to head down that road. Jesus came because we are going as humanity, as people, in completely the wrong direction. And we need to be turned round to go in the right direction. That's why Jesus came. We all need saving. We are all helpless without Jesus before God. That's the reality. This boy's life is under the control of evil. Now, you know, that's obvious. We're told as much, aren't we? He's possessed by an evil spirit that has robbed him of speech. What is less obvious is that actually we're all in the same position. We may not show it in the same ways, but you put us in the right place at the right time and we'll show it all right. You just think about what you watch on the television or what you see in the newspapers. And it's easy to judge. Say, well, you know, I would never do that in that situation. We would all do that in that situation without Jesus. Think about your own attitudes and actions towards the people that you don't like. We've all got them, haven't we? We don't all get on with everybody. Examine yourself. Can you honestly say, that you're perfect? Then you say, well, no, I can't say I'm perfect. And, you know, that's what it means to be human, isn't it? Yeah. That's our exact problem. And we seem to use it as an excuse. Oh, well, I'm human. We are human. We are not perfect. In fact, we are helpless. And we need saving. We need Jesus. The problem we have is that we just don't realize it. That's what makes the difference between us and this boy. He was brought to a situation where he realized what he needed. Have you ever thought about him? Have you ever thought about Jesus? Why he came? Why he is still such a controversial figure 2,000 years on? Because if you put in one of the two categories that I mentioned earlier, fictional or belongs to a different age, then I think that verse 19, the words that Jesus uses to that generation, are the same for you this morning. He says, oh, unbelieving generation. Unbelieving generation. That brings us to our second point. The problem of our unbelief. Because we see, don't we, from this exasperating cry of Jesus, that he came to give us something to believe in. That's why Jesus came. We aren't commanded to believe in a God who remains so far away that it's impossible for us to get anywhere near him. We're not commanded to believe in a God who just sort of wound up the world and let it go and then went away somewhere and said, well, you know, figure it out for yourselves. We're asked to believe in a God who sees us in our need, who sees us in our helplessness, and who comes to the earth in Jesus to show us what he's really like. We are asked to believe in a God who has come looking for us. He hasn't just left us to it. He wants to be in our lives. He wants to deliver us from this evil. And he wants us to believe in him. He expects us to believe in him. The second half of that verse where he says, unbelieving generation, it tells us, Jesus says, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Why is he saying that? You know, why has he come? So that we would believe in him. The disciples are showing disbelief. The Father, as we see, is showing disbelief. The teachers of the law arguing this with the disciples are showing disbelief. And Jesus is thinking, you know, I came for more than this. I came so that you would believe. How long do I need to convince you? What more do I have to show you if you've been looking at this gospel as we have? Jesus has done more amazing things than you could possibly imagine. He has proved himself beyond any shadow of a doubt to be the Son of God time and time and time again. And we get to this situation and he says, how long do you need? How long do I have to be here? Why is our unbelief so deep within us? So he shows them again the power of God, doesn't he? He says, bring the boy to me. He calls the father over because the boy starts convulsing in front of him. And he questions him. We see the father's unbelief in verse 22. I haven't got it in my notes, so I'm going to have to look over here in the Bible. If you've got yours open. It says in verse 22, Jesus has asked, you know, how long has this been going on? He says, it's often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. And that's shown to be a sign of unbelief. But we can understand that, can't we? We can understand this guy's situation. I mean, he's brought his son to the disciples and they've failed. So surely, you know, he's starting to think, well, you know, if they can't do it, can anybody help him? So he just says to Jesus, if you can do anything. the disciples have failed. And this can be a big problem for us today. This can be a big problem for us today. Those who are following Jesus can put us off Jesus. You may have been in churches before. You may have been treated appallingly by people who have the name Christian. But don't let that put you off Jesus himself, because he's bigger than that and he's better than that. There was a story about Gandhi, I don't know how true it is, that one day he was impressed by Jesus, by what he'd read and by what he'd heard. And so he went to church in India. And when he got to the door, the guy on the door turned around and he said, "We don't let your sort in here." And Gandhi wasn't a follower of Jesus, and we know he went off and did lots of other things. He was impressed by Jesus, but he was put off by those who followed him. Now that doesn't mean we'll all put you off, I hope. You know, that's not our intention. Sometimes we get so consumed in the things that we're doing that we forget who it is that we're following. And I would want to apologize to anybody that's been hurt by a Christian in the name of Christ. But I would say, don't let that put you off coming to the man himself, to the person himself, because he's bigger than that and he's better than that. And that's what this gospel shows us. And that's what this guy is in danger of doing. You know, you say, "Well, I've seen your Christianity. It's failed." You know, and he brings his guy and he says, if Jesus, if you can do it. Jesus says, if I can? You see, he's confused Jesus with his followers, and the two are different. I am not Jesus. Nobody here is. Jesus is Jesus. Don't confuse me with him or anybody else. Because if you look at me, you'll be disappointed. If you look at Jesus, you won't. Jesus says, if I can. He says, anything is possible to him who believes. Anything is possible to him who believes. That's a great phrase, isn't it? Why? Because it's the one who we believe in who is able to do it. The one who we believe in is able to do it. Jesus is God revealed to us. He has the power of God, and to him nothing is impossible. So Jesus picks him up. I don't think he's telling him off particularly. He's just getting him to realize, don't judge me on the people that follow me. Judge me on who I am. Judge Christ on who he is. And we come to this honest response. I think this is a brilliant response by the Father. And I think that, you know, any Christian will identify with this. He turns to Jesus openly and honestly and he says, "I do believe. Help my unbelief. It's difficult for me, Jesus, to believe this. I see it, but it's difficult." Is that our prayer? We all go through times of wondering, times of doubt, of struggle. But we can say to God, "I believe, help my unbelief." We can be honest with him. We don't need to put on a mask. We don't need to make out we believe when we don't. We can be honest with God. He knows us inside out anyway. He says to him, "Help my unbelief." Do you think this would have helped? When Jesus saw that the crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the evil spirit, the deaf and mute spirit. He said, "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. Jesus restored him. Do you think that would have helped his unbelief? I think so. Jesus has come to show the power of God over evil. He takes the boy and he delivers him. As he's done countless times in this gospel, this isn't the first time. He's done it time and time again. Because the reality of this story is this: when someone in need of Jesus comes to Jesus, he is powerful enough to deliver them. I don't know what your life is like. I don't know if you're going through a good spell or a bad spell. I don't know if things are great or if you're in trouble. But I do know this, You need Jesus. Every one of us in this room needs Jesus. The hardest thing that we have is realizing our need. That wasn't a problem for the Father and the Son. They saw it. It was right there in front of them. But it can be a problem for us. Are we part of this unbelieving generation? My third and final point is very short. Our third point, our need. This comes from the passage later on when the disciples and Jesus are alone. They ask him. They're confused. Why couldn't we do it? You know, I mean, our situation could have just been handled so much better. Why couldn't we heal this guy? Why couldn't we drive the demon out? They're genuinely confused. And the problem is simply this. They've forgotten who it is that does that work. They've forgotten who it is that's more powerful than evil. They've forgotten the power of Jesus. They thought they could do it themselves. And Jesus says, you never prayed. You relied upon yourself and not me. Because the disciples need Jesus just as much as anybody else. And the reality of the situation is this. Whether you're in church this morning for the first time and you're not a Christian, or whether you've been in church your whole life, you're 80 years old and you've been trusting Jesus for 79 of those years. Whether you're that person or that person, you need Jesus. So let's not forget those of us who know him. Let's not become comfortable and familiar. We need Jesus in everything. Jesus says this kind, this evil spirit, this power over evil only comes by prayer. It only comes by relying on the power of God, not upon ourselves. And we need that power every day in our lives to overcome evil. And so the challenge is this. Do you believe? Do you believe? Sarah, Holly, and Sam have been baptized today and testified to what Jesus has done in their lives. They have met him. They know the difference he can make. And it hasn't been easy for them, has it? I mean, you felt for them, you know, at the front, they're sharing their testimony, answering. You know, it's difficult to stand up in front of 200 more people. But they've done it because of what they know Jesus has done for them. Because in prayer, God has given them the strength to do it. Two of them said to me this week, wrote in an email, I'm nervous about Sunday. And I wrote back and said, good. Because that means you'll be relying on God. And that's what we need to do. It means you'll pray and you rely on God. Because that's what we need to do in every situation. Do you realize your need of God? That he expects us to believe in him. That's what he expects. Now, obviously I'm talking about something far more important than Father Christmas. Because belief in Jesus does impact our lives. Not just your view of Christmas. Although, it will change that as well.